Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Reinbold. And Jeff, we are going to get stuck into a lot of great NFL action from week four. And I guess, Jeff, be remiss of us not to make, you know, just terrible, terrible couple of days with things that have been happening in America, in Las Vegas, but our job is to create a diversion, a distraction to that, and the chance for people to switch off from all that horrible stuff and talk about sports for a little while, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's the great thing about sport, Neil. You know, whether it's, you know, the NFL, the Premiership, whatever your game is, those games provide hours of respite from the craziness of the world. And I'm going to tell you something, it's a crazy world out there.
Let's talk NFL then for the next hour. We're going to dig into the games in week four. We'll take your questions in the mailbag and we'll make our picks for week five in the NFL because we're rolling along. We're in week five already. But week four was another good one, Jeff. That's back-to-back, really exciting. You know, the first 2 weeks were lots of good storylines, but, you know, the games weren't always that compelling. We've now had back-to-back compelling weekends, even if the games haven't been compelling in London.
Well, you know what, Neil? You look at it, and I was going through the standings last night, and I'm just thinking, who in August would have ever thought that the Rams would be leading their division, that the Bills would be leading their division, that the Jets would be in second place, and that the Dolphins would be in last place in, you know, the AFC. So you go through almost every division, and, you know, again, you just say, this is an absolutely crazy, crazy year of football.
Jeff, we will talk Rams in a little while. Rams are averaging 35 points per game. Just, we've got to remember, they were 3-1 to start last season as well, but it feels like a different 3-1, doesn't it, Jeff? I mean, we'll dig into them a little bit later, but there's a vibe around Sean McVay and that whole Rams team at the moment.
Yeah, there is, and when you watch them play, it's diametrically opposite. I mean, just think about Gurley. I mean, when he came into the league, certainly, you know, the only question about him was his knee, that ACL that he had gotten at Georgia. But everybody knew he was going to be a great back if he was healthy. What nobody could have predicted at that time, and I really believe this because you and I sat and went through the draft and all of it, Neil. Nobody would have said there's a guy that would be able to do some of the things that he's been able to do under Sean McVay. He has now become a legitimate threat out of the backfield as a pass receiver. So not only is he a great running back, he's a guy now that can go out much like Marshall Faulk. I mean, you got to go back to Steven Jackson, I think, in 2000 for a Rams back to have had it that kind of day catching the football. So, you know, that's part of it. The diversity of the offense is part of it. You know, under Jeff, you know, they were a run first and play action team. Now they can beat you a lot of different ways running it. They can beat you with play action. They can beat you with Sammy Watkins. They can be, I mean, they've got weapons. And then you go to the other side of the football, where, you know, Greg Williams, they always played physical and aggressive under Greg Williams, but I saw Wade make adjustments at halftime. Dallas runs for, I think, 119 in the first half, you know, and Wade gets more aggressive with his run calls in the second half, gets another guy in the box, and that they shut off Ezekiel Elliott and make Dak Prescott beat him, and Dak just wasn't able to do that. So I think if you're a Rams fan, you got to really like the look of your football team.
Yeah, Jerry Jones said that Wade Phillips was the difference in the game in the end, and you know, Wade was an old Cowboys head coach, and that might have been tough for Jerry to say, but he held the Cowboys to just 6 points after the break. And Jeff, I thought it was very interesting. I put this on Twitter yesterday about the Rams fans must be excited to have this guy at the helm, and it was Sean McVay in the locker room delivering the game balls and the post-game speech to his team. And he kind of took a back seat and he made it all about Wade Phillips. And, you know, I just think this is a young coach who's very confident, very comfortable in his own skin, that he doesn't feel like he has to be the one saying it's all about him all the time. He knew that that game meant something to Wade Phillips. And after the game, he kind of let Wade Phillips take center stage. That said a lot about Sean McVay, I think.
I agree with you 100%, partner. That's the mark of a great one. Mm. When it's not about you, and particularly because he's 31 years old, that is, you know, you hear people say that guy's an old soul. You know, that kid's an old yep. soul. But that's the kind of thing that a coach who's got it, who's been in the business for a long time, figures out that it's not about you. It's about the people you have around you, and when you celebrate their success, you're helping your football team. But again, when you think about Sean McVay, here's the kid who grew up in it.
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm. he's been around the game his whole life. And you're right. I think that you made a great point about Jerry Jones coming out and saying that it was Wade was the difference. Let me tell you, that's got to be tough for Jerry to say, because he fired Wade.
Right.
And, you know, I think that that's a, saying, as they say, a mouthful for Jerry Jones.
Jeff, I want to talk a little bit of coaching and get into some of the London games. We've had now a couple of back-to-back games at Wembley Stadium, and that was the early start for Week 4's Sunday action. The Saints were all over the Dolphins, 20-0 in that game at Wembley. I was obviously, that wasn't a Sky game. That was a BBC game. So I was doing all the pre-game stuff, Jeff, and then I headed out to Sky, but I did watch the first drive of the game. I went and found George and my wife, and we sat in the end zone, and I watched the first drive, and they were moving right down the field towards me, and they got a first and goal at the 4, the Dolphins, and I thought, this is Jay Ajayi country. This is where you give the ball to Jay, and they didn't, and they went empty backfield, and they threw, and Cutler threw the interception, as we know, and the Saints rolled on to victory. But I wondered, as I was then got in my car and head into Sky Sports, I wonder what the rest of that game would have played out like, because I wonder if you ever think about that as a coach, and maybe you can fill us in on that, because my perception was that if Jay scores a touchdown in his home country on his very first drive playing a game in London, I wonder how hard he would have run the rest of that game. Do you ever, as a coach, broaden it out from just the single play that you call and think, if I get this guy involved, he's going to have a big day? And I wonder what you thought of Adam Gase calling that play down near the goal line.
Well, I think all of those things factor into how you address your game plan. And, you know, certainly when you got a guy like Jay, who is your bell cow back, and it's his first opportunity. I mean, that the immensity of that moment for him, I think, was reflected in some of the sideline, you know, outbursts that you saw from him. Because, you know, he's not that guy. He's never been that guy. Mm. And I think he was so frustrated with his lack of touches. And frankly, I was frustrated for his lack of touches. And, you know, I just really think that, like you, Neil, that they give it to him. I don't care if you got to give it to him 4 straight times there to knock one in.
Mm.
And he scores, and that stadium goes as crazy as that stadium would have gone. It would have been on like Donkey Kong, and the game would have been a completely different scenario. And that interception took all of the wind out of the Dolphins, and then they couldn't find an identity the rest of the game. It was throw it, and they never really ran it with Jay, and backs are coming in and out, and it just I really think that Adam Gase would love to have that one back again.
Mm. Jeff, we've had a couple of back-to-back weeks. I'll probably get myself in trouble here with the NFL, but I'm going to give it a go anyway. we've had back-to-back weeks, and we have these fan events around the games, and we always get the teams and the coaches come out. And over the past 2 weeks, we didn't have Doug Marrone, John Harbaugh, or Adam Gase attend the fan events because they're so busy before the day before the game. Sean Payton did come, to his credit, for the New Orleans Saints on Regent Street, but Jeff, help me out here, because Adam Gase and John Harbaugh, their team still lost badly. A coach is precious about every minute of the day, and I personally wonder, well, you know, you didn't come to our fan events, but you didn't win the game either. It didn't make a jot of difference.
You know, in terms of contact with their teams, no, because really at that point in the week, when you're talking about the day before, you have your little walkthrough, and then the players are released. And typically at home, the way it would work is you'd have your walkthrough in the morning. You'd have, you know, lunch for the players, probably at the So then the players would be released, and they would be free until usually around 9 o'clock that night. They have to be at the team hotel for post game meetings and one more meeting and blah blah blah. So there's that time in there, and certainly there's time for those guys to do that. I just think that what happens is they get football players are creatures of habit and routine and don't like distractions, and I think coaches are even more that way.
Right.
And sometimes they can, could they have done it? I'm sure they could have done it. I think you know that, Neil, because you've had enough of them on the stage in the past. I think it's disappointing to me, frankly, that they don't, because those games are so precious. And the communication issue that they had in the first, particularly in the first half with the headset, that got a lot of play over here. And you heard some of the media, and it's almost embarrassing to me that I consider myself part of the media when I hear them say, well, that's one guy said, that was truly a London thing. And I'm thinking to myself, you are a absolute knucklehead.
Well, Jeff,
and how you get in front of a microphone is beyond me.
You know what I put on Twitter last week. It was actually after we recorded last week's podcast. But, the stuff that John Harbaugh was saying was quite insulting to the UK and to how we put on games here, because, and the NFL have kind of stayed quiet on that. But, I can speak out on it, in my position and as a member of the media. And he was wrong. You tell me, when have you ever known a head coach on this side of the pond or back there in the United States never have a say in where his team stays?
The thing that how that all came up, and I'm a Johnny Harbaugh fan. I really do like the guy. I had a great visit with him in the tunnel before the game.
Yeah. I spoke to him out in the summer. He's a great guy, but he's making excuses.
Exactly. And I'm not going to excuse that behavior, because the reality of it is, where you stayed or any of the other things that you talked about as being distractions and problems and issues and all that other stuff, they're only that if you allow them to become that. Mm. And then when you use them as an excuse for not playing poorly, for playing poorly, what are you saying about when you're at home against Pittsburgh and you score 9 points and don't look much better on offense than you did or defense that week? So Le'Veon Bell runs for 144 yards. Well, that doesn't have anything to do with where you stayed in London. That has everything to do with your football team. The Ravens they've got some work to do. I mean, they're 2-2, and they've been 2-2 before and got to the AFC, championship game and all that other stuff. But they got to understand that, it's about the product that they put on the field, the preparation and all those other things, not the other stuff that you throw out there to excuse poor play.
Yeah, we had two fantastic weekends as fans, though, and obviously the games didn't turn out to be close ones at Wembley Stadium, but we did have just incredible memories taking over Regent Street. There were 600,000 fans out there. We had great fun at the tailgate parties and everything, and now we pause for breath, and then week 7 and 8 we move on to Twickenham for the Rams against the Cardinals and the Browns against the Vikings. And you can still get tickets for these games. There are some away team ticket returns, so the teams have an opportunity to sell to their fans, then they give back what they don't sell, they give back to NFL UK. So there are a limited number of these tickets available, so you can still get a taste of the London games this year. Go to www.ticketmaster.co.uk/NFL. Let's move on, talk week four, the rest of week four then, Jeff, and some shocks. Buffalo beat the Falcons on the road. The Panthers beat the Patriots on the road. It was just a fantastic weekend. We talked a bit about the Rams and the Cowboys, which would go down as an upset, although not necessarily a huge one. But, where do you want to start, Jeff? There's a blank slate of great games here that we can go through.
I want to start in Buffalo because that might have been the biggest, to me, shocker of them all. And I think what Buffalo has done under Sean McDermott is nothing short of amazing, really. There's not anybody that gave them a chance, especially in the offseason. They lose Sammy Watkins. They they lose guys in free agency. Mm. You know, it looks like, wow, they're just starting over. They're going to dismantle this team, you know, have a bad year to get better drafted. I mean, you heard all that stuff coming out of even the Buffalo media. I mean, Stephon Gilmore is gone. I mean, it's just, you look at it and go, what are they doing? Mm. But he had a plan, and Bean had a plan. The GM had a plan, and they were going to say, all right, we're going to improve our football team. You know, it's one of those deals, Neil, of addition by subtraction. They're going to get rid of some guys that, for them, don't fit. Now, that doesn't mean they're bad guys. It just meant for them that they didn't fit. Mm. And you look at the biggest difference in Buffalo, because Buffalo's always had good players on defense. I mean, they are very talented on defense.
Yeah.
You know, you look through that roster and they've got good players. But they've always been a team that was going to jump off sides at the wrong time, take a 15-yard penalty, blow a coverage, be in the wrong gap. Just the discipline of their defense wasn't what it needed to be. Now you look at them, and they're making plays in critical moments, you know. And, you know, again, how long will it last? I don't know, because, again, you lose Matthews with the – I think two guys had thumb surgery after the game.
Yeah.
But for right now – I think Sean McDermott and the Bills have done as good a coaching job and a culture change job as anybody in the league.
Yeah, Jeff, just some of the numbers to back up what you're saying. They forced three turnovers against the Atlanta Falcons. Micah Hyde had two interceptions, marshalling that defense from the safety position. They scored 13 points off turnovers. They don't really have many receivers. Jordan Matthews had two catches for 10 yards in the game. Tyrod Taylor kind of scrambles around and makes the odd big play. Charles Clay had a good day. He had five catches, 112 yards. But if rookie Zay Jones doesn't drop a pass near the goal line against Carolina, Jeff, this is one of the two undefeated teams in the NFL. They're that good at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, they are. And you cannot deny the fact that, you know, they can stop you. And, I mean, they can play defense. They run the football. LeSean McCoy, he's always been a great back, but he seems more focused right now than he was, you know, in the past where he had all the kind of distractions going on. And, you know, I think that's the thing that they've been able to do in Buffalo. And now the tough part is when you're involved in that kind of a culture change is now that you started to have a little success, that you don't get full of yourself, that you recognize the success you've had comes from these things, the way you prepare, the way you play, the discipline you play with, all of those things. I don't think the Bills are going to be a team that's going to blow very many people out, but they're going to be a team that's going to be a pain in the tail to play because they're going to be tough, they're going to be physical, and they're going to make you play to beat them.
The big difference being, Jeff, you won't hear from them all week like you used to.
Yeah, and I mean, that's part of it. And, you know, and that really kind of fits the Buffalo mentality. Mm. I mean, Buffalo, who thinks about Buffalo? The only time you think about Buffalo is when you want to order chicken wings or when you think about one of the Moscow and Buffalo in the winter, two of the places I don't want to be, right? So when you think about, that's how you think about Buffalo, they kind of fit that mentality, and Sean fit that kind of, you know, got that kind of grit about him. And it was really interesting when I was driving across country. I was listening to Sirius XM radio, and Bill Polian does a great job on there. And he was talking about being invited by the Bills to come back and be part and spend some time with Sean McVay and talk about how they built it in Buffalo when they had that great run of four Super Bowl teams. And I think that that's really smart by Bean and McVay to reach back. And there is something unique about Buffalo and how you have to, you know, you have to be fiscally sound. And you got to – Polian talked about practicing salary cap chemistry. Mm. And what he was talking about was, you know, making sure that your best players are paid, but, you know, not – overpay guys and that are underperform, and now you got issues in the locker room. He said it's really important in that market in particular to handle those situations well.
Yeah, Sean McDermott definitely off to a good start with the Buffalo Bills. He's got his team playing defense. One chap who hasn't got his team playing defense yet is Bill Belichick. And the New England Patriots, Jeff, they give up 444 yards against the Carolina Panthers, a 33-30 defeat or victory for the Panthers. And New England, Jeff, at home, this used to be Fortress Foxborough. They lost on opening weekend. They could have very easily lost to the Houston Texans, and then Tom Brady pulls a rabbit out of the hat. And then this time it did catch up with them. We've got to start with the defense, haven't we? Because Tom's still playing at an MVP pace.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. You listen to other guys talk about the game and the games and the teams, and they're talking about, well, you know, they lost LeGarrette Blount, so they can't run the ball anymore. The reason they're not running the ball is because they're behind all the time. They have to throw it to try and come back and win the game. They haven't had a chance to be able to run the football because the defense can't get off the field and they can't stop anybody. So, you know, the issues in New England, as I see it on defense, are, first of all, up front, kneeling the front seven, they're not quite good enough, right? They're not they don't have – New England's always had a couple of, you know, they may not be dominant physically in terms of, you know, oh boy, you think about that guy's a freak of nature, can't block him. But they had the Teddy Bruschis and they had the Ninkovichs and they had the Vrabels and they had those kinds of guys who really, really had toughness and could, you know, make big plays. They lose Hightower and he's been it's been hard for him. And then you go to the back end, and this is where it's going to be really interesting to me, because Stephon Gilmore is not playing inside that scheme. They go out and get him in free agency and spend a lot of money, which is not their modus operandi.
No.
And now you pair him with Malcolm Butler and Patrick Chung and McCourty, and you think we got probably the best secondary in the AFC. Well, they give up huge plays, and it seems like Stephon Gilmore's kind of playing his own football out there. You know, he gets the holding call on the sack. He's been beaten a couple times just because of communication issues. The way they play defense in the back end, if you don't communicate, if you're not all on the same page, you're going to have some serious issues, and that's what's been killing them. So I think either Gilmore gets and Belichick was very careful not to finger him only in the game, but I think if Stephon Gilmore doesn't start playing Patriot defense in the back end, they'll trade him or get rid of him or something will happen, because they're not going to put up with that.
It's funny, Jeff, when you look at the Patriots, because some players they do pay the money to, so they did pay big money to Stephon Gilmore, but you just mentioned they don't have some of the talent in the front seven. Obviously, Ninkovich has retired, but Chandler Jones is now playing for the Arizona Cardinals. The Patriots didn't have that kind of market value on him. Jamie Collins is now playing for the Cleveland Browns, and I think a lot of Patriots fans would like to see both of those players still in New England's front seven. And you look at what they did in the offseason, with the exception of Gilmore, they tried to swing on Coney Ealy and they missed, but everything else felt like they were giving Tom Brady more weapons, Jeff, whether it be Rex Burkhead, whether it be, you know, adding Brandon Cooks, Dwayne Allen. It felt like they've loaded everything up on offense. I don't know. We always push Belichick to the top of the pile as a general manager as well. And I don't know if we should, based on the last couple of years. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, you know, you hit on one that really nobody has talked about was, you know, we did the Super Bowl, I don't know, was Carolina and Denver, and Coney Ealy, you know, really had if they win that game, he's the MVP of the Super Bowl,
yeah,
the way he played that day. And, you know, I think that's one of the bigger swing and misses, if you want, that the Patriots have had, because that was going to be the guy that was going to provide that pass rush that you lost when you lost Chandler Jones, when you lost Jamie Collins, those impact players up front. And then Hightower and he could, you know, be those guys. Well, Hightower gets nicked, and then for whatever reason, Coney Ealy doesn't even make it out of training camp. And then, you know, they bring in Stephon Gilmore. And so it's not like they didn't make moves to help the defense, I think, Neil, but I think what you saw was a couple of moves that, for right now, certainly Coney Ealy didn't work, but for right now, Stephon Gilmore's not working either.
Does Belichick think that, because obviously he's got the rings to back up any argument he's ever going to get into on any level of football, Jeff, but does he feel that his scheme will always overcome talent deficient areas? Because I know that sometimes your coaches say, well, you've got to have the horses, you've still got to have people to make plays. And if you think about what the Patriots have tried to do since Chandler Jones went, if we look at it purely from the pass rush, it was, well, we'll stick in a bit of Jabal Sheard and we'll stick in a little bit of Chris Long towards the end of his career. It feels like Belichick and even Malcolm Butler wants to be paid like a number one corner, and Belichick's kind of stalling on that. Now, Butler's been kind of very up and down, but I don't know. I wonder if he feels like his scheme will overcome all.
Well, I don't think so. I mean, I think he's smarter than that. I think he's been around the game enough to recognize that when he had really good defenses everywhere he's been, when he was with the defensive coordinator with the Giants, a lot of it had to do with the fact he had Eric Carson and Lawrence Taylor and Jim Burt, all those people. And the same thing has been true in New England. Where it's different, in my opinion, in New England, is they don't play as well schematically as they have.
Right.
And I think when you lose guys like Long and you lose guys like Ninkovich and, you start to take those kind of guys out of it, then you lose that on-the-field coach, if you will, that makes sure that everybody understands what gap they're in, how they line up, how you're going to play this technique. I mean, they do as good a job as anybody in football coaching technique football and, playing sound defense and, gap cancellation, all of it. I mean, they do some really, really good things. However, the reality of it is if you, the game, as they say, there's an old coaching saying that goes, the game ain't about the X's and the O's. It's about the Jimmies and the Joes. And if your Jimmies and Joes are better than their X's and O's, sometimes it's just, no matter how sound you are, or fundamentally sound you are, you're not going to be able to make plays. And that's what I see right now. They're not sound in the back end, and they're not good enough in the front end, and that's what's hurting them.
All right, let's move on and talk about Deshaun Watson. What a performance from the Houston Texans rookie quarterback, Jeff. 57-14, they beat the Titans. He was the first rookie quarterback in the Super Bowl era to account for 5 touchdowns in a game, 4 passing and 1 rushing, and Houston had 445 yards. Jeff, when we talked about Deshaun Watson coming out, one of the things that everyone said was that of the group of rookie quarterbacks, he was the most pro ready. Are we seeing that now? And what have you made of Deshaun Watson's first, 3.5 games now in the NFL?
Well, I think what you like about Deshaun Watson more than anything else right now, Neil, is the way he's trending. Because you look at the first game he played when he had to go in and play, and he was not very good. I mean, he struggled, right? But then he comes out and he throws for 300 against New England. And, obviously we've talked about New England's struggles on defense right now. But now the next week he comes back and has, a record-breaking rookie game. I just think that the kid is one of those guys that has the ability to play beyond his years. And, one of the things that you talk to the coaches about when you're looking at him for the draft was they all talked about how his preparation habits, what a good football mind he had, his football IQ, all those things. And you're starting to see that on the field. Certainly he's a talented guy. I mean, you watch what he can do getting out of the pocket and making plays and extending plays and throwing the ball. And, I think he's got the confidence of his teammates, which I don't think Tom Savage ever really had. And I think that when you listen to what's being said by their receivers and by the rest of the football team, that's part of it. You have to have that leadership ability, that belief from the locker room that you're good enough to help us win this thing. And I think that kid is just like Dak did as a rookie. I think that kid has won over his teammates.
Let's stick with rookie quarterbacks because Mitch Trubisky is getting the nod with the Chicago Bears. Mike Glennon, last Thursday night against the Green Bay Packers, 4 turnovers from him, 2 interceptions, 2 lost fumbles. He had 8 turnovers in the first 4 games of the season. And Jeff, although they gave him decent money, not top-end money, but sort of definitely middle of the pack money, 15, 16 million per year for Mike Glennon, which is starting quarterback money, it feels like we wondered how long he would hold off Trubisky, and it's turned out to be just four games.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, Neil, that I really truly believe that it may not have a lot to do with it from the coaching area, but when you look at the whole big picture, that as Deshaun Watson came to the fore and started to play well, there was more and more and more pressure on Pace and Fox and everybody in that Bear organization to get Trubisky on the field. Now, had Glennon not turned it over as much as he has in those first three games, I think we're not even talking about this. But when you factor it all together, the perfect storm, as they say, you got a guy that you draft high, you bring in a guy to, quote, help let the young one learn. He doesn't play well. You're struggling as a football team. You got a fan base that wants change. You got a rookie quarterback in the league who's lighting it up, and all of a sudden everybody's in love with him. The pressure now to put Trubisky in becomes excruciating. And, you know, Monday night against a Viking defense that, I'm going to tell you something, they are good, is a big, big ask for this kid. So I really think that they're going to have to do the things with Emil that they did in training camp, where they, you know, run the ball and get him, you know, on the edge with the nakeds and the bootlegs and the play actions and those kind of things. Mm. And I'm telling you, I'll bet you right now, Mike Zimmer is sitting in their offices, and they're saying, we are going to make this kid beat us. There is no way we're going to let him out of the pocket, and there's no way we're going to let him run the ball. He's going to have to show us he can beat us from the pocket.
Jeff, just finishing off week four, it seemed to be one of those horrible weeks where we kept seeing one injury after another. And ironically, last year on Christmas Eve, Derek Carr and Marcus Mariota went down on the same day with broken legs. On Sunday, Marcus Mariota went down with a hamstring injury, but Derek Carr's was a bit more serious, a fractured transverse process. I know what that is now, thanks to Tony Romo. And he's out for 2 to 6 weeks. I mean, it was a nasty weekend. Falcons lost Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu. Dalvin Cook was a horrible-looking torn ACL ending his season with the Minnesota Vikings. Let's just look at Derek Carr there, Jeff, because when we were doing our NFL UK Live ahead of the game between the Jags and the Ravens, we had Ross Tucker up on stage on the Saturday before the game, and Ross was asked a question about J.J. Watt. And Ross said, let me tell you, when you've had a back injury, you don't use the past tense. He said, you always have a back problem the rest of the way. So, I mean, when you're messing about with a back, this is going to be worrying times for Carr.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it in Tony Romo. I mean, you know, when you have a back problem, particularly you start messing around with, you know, the structural part of your back, your spine, those are really, really, really scary things to me, because like you say, and like Ross said, you're going to carry that with you most of your career, probably the rest of your life. Now, conversely, you know, I'm really worried about Mariota's hamstring, because the reason I'm worried about that is, you know, his mobility is such a part of his game. Mm. And every time he gets out of the pocket now and he starts to stretch out and run a little bit, there's going to be that, oh, my goodness, oh my gosh. Man, hamstrings are just like backs, just like Ross said. Hamstrings are niggling injuries that will just stay there and stay there and stay there. So both teams are really, really, really concerned about their starting quarterbacks, because if they don't have their starting quarterbacks playing at a high level, both of these teams can finish third or fourth in their division.
And Dalvin Cook's was a nasty one, Jeff, and it's so frustrating at the start of an exciting career. Made a really good start to life in the NFL, and the first glance is just like, oh, he's fumbled that under pressure, and then you look, it's like, no, he's going down, and the reason he's fumbled is because he's torn his knee ligaments on the way to the ground.
Yeah, and you know what? Here's a kid that is tearing it up, and, you know, I thought he was on his way to, you know, certainly an opportunity at the Rookie of the Year. Mm. And, the Vikings, he was the guy. He was going to be the one they were going to ride until they got their quarterback back. And, you know, so much confidence in him. And, you know, just a great young player. And then that's how fast it can go. I mean, and that's why, you know, you just never know. I mean, that's why you keep playing, because this whole thing can change so fast. Mm. I mean, so fast. One injury to a critical player, and the entire dynamic of the division.
The reason he would have had a chance at Rookie of the Year, Jeff, is because Kareem Hunt's aiming higher. He got a shot at MVP the way he's playing.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know what? It's about, and we've said this a number of times, Neil, and I really think it's important that people realize this. Those kinds of awards come when ability meets opportunity. And the scheme allows, you know, you're in a scheme where you can showcase your skill. Ezekiel Elliott last year, all right, they stick him in the backfield and they're going to make him the feature guy. Well, that's what he needed to do. You know, you look at Dalvin Cook, same thing this year. And, you know, Hunt, same thing this year. His opportunity came when another guy got hurt, but you never know. And you have to have the talent, certainly, but you have to be in a system that is going to feature you and give you the opportunity to showcase your abilities. And, you know, that's where, you know, I think that why Cook and Hunt and, you know, all those guys, and now all of a sudden, you know, Todd Gurley's revitalized. And, you know, I just think it's so much about those three factors: talent, opportunity, and scheme.
Anything else from week four catch your eye, Jeff, before we make our picks for week five?
Oh, yeah, just the craziness of it, Neil. You know, like I said, you look around and you know, here we are. We're looking. The Raiders are in, you know, third place in a division that you know, if it wasn't for the Chargers, they'd probably be in last place in the division. And you know, that was a team we all talked about had a chance to go to the Super Bowl. The Cowboys are not playing well, and all of a sudden, Philadelphia now is you know, the top cat in that division. And I just think it's early, but it's just so incredible how, you know, this is one of those years in the league that you can't predict how this thing's going to turn out.
All right, Jeff, let's make our picks for week five in the NFL. It starts on Thursday night with a good one and a real test now for the Patriots team we were talking about just a few minutes ago, New England at Tampa Bay.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. This is going to be really a fun one to watch. You know, Tampa Bay, you know, certainly has weapons enough on offense, and they got to be licking their chops. Plus, they get the muscle hamster back for this one. So I think that Tampa Bay is going to win the football game. They are better on defense than a lot of people give them credit for. Mm. And wasn't it fun, Neil, to see our old buddy Brent Grimes still making plays,
yeah,
defying father's time in the secondary with the Bucs.
I think there's a lot of good stuff going on in Tampa Bay. I just think that desperation and a willingness to prove that they are still a force to be reckoned with means New England win the game. So I'm going New England in that one. Let's move on to Sunday night. San Francisco is still looking for their first win of the season. Kyle Shanahan says we've got to have more out of Brian Hoyer. And they're playing against the Indianapolis Colts, who had a good first half against Seattle, but completely disappeared. It'll be Jacoby Brissett again, Jeff. Andrew Luck's going to start practicing this week, but he won't be ready. So San Francisco at Indianapolis.
You know what? I look at that San Francisco team, and they gave Arizona all they could handle. You know, I think they're getting better. I agree with that. Hoyer's not performing at a high level for him yet, but I'm gonna take San Francisco to go on the road and win in Indianapolis.
All right, you're going to San Francisco. This is getting interesting because I'm going to pick Indy to win at home. The Jets at Cleveland. Don't look now, Jeff. The Jets are 2-2.
You know what? 2-2 and going to be 3-2 after they go into the mistake by the lake and beat the Brownies.
Jeff, just on the Browns, I thought they were going to. Well, I mean, it's early. I know we're only a month in, but you know, I wasn't quite drinking all of the Kool-Aid, but I was thinking that they were going to be better. And I saw a stat today. Hugh Jackson, in his last 25 games as a head coach, is 1-24.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. What's scarier to me than that, and that's scary enough, is that there were some leaks of frustration, I guess is the way I would describe it,
mm-hmm,
where a media person had asked you whether you thought they were good enough to be competitive, and he said, I don't know, you better ask Foshy Brown that question.
Wow.
And boy, that is, and then he backtracked the next day, but that's an indication that, yeah, exactly.
All right, we're both going Jets in that one then. Let's move on to Carolina at Detroit. Both teams are 3-1. Both teams not getting the headlines that others around the NFL are, but both will take where they are right now, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, I think both teams feel pretty good. Carolina's got to feel better that, you know, Cam really saw Cam, the Cam that they have to have to be successful.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna take Detroit. I'm starting to buy Detroit a little bit because they beat Minnesota 14-7. It wasn't a 35-32 game, and Stafford has to play out of his mind in the fourth quarter. They played great football in all three phases and won.
Yeah, they're playing some good defense this year, which is a kind of developing story for the Lions. I'm going Detroit to win that one as well. Buffalo at Cincinnati. So the Bills are 3-1. The Bengals look much more comfortable with Bill Lazor at offensive coordinator. Certainly Andy Dalton does, albeit, you know, it was against the Browns last week, but they also put in a good offensive performance against Green Bay, Jeff. Do Cincinnati trip up the Buffalo Bills? This game is in Cincinnati.
Yeah, this is one of those ones. This is not a trap game, because certainly when you're the Bills, every game's a big game for you. But I think this will be a real test for the Bills, whether they can, you know, take their success flu inoculations during the week and not get off, you know, caught up in themselves. I'm going to go with Cincinnati because I think the injuries to the Buffalo receivers are going to be a factor.
Yeah, I'm going Bengals as well. They've got AJ Green back on track, Gio Bernard, and I mean, it just everyone's kind of contributed the last couple of weeks on their offense. So I'm going Bengals as well. One of these teams is finally going to get a win, Jeff. The LA Chargers at the New York Giants. The Giants, I mean, Ben McAdoo's seat is probably warming, but he'll say, well, it's just a couple of walk-off field goals. I mean, they've lost back-to-back weeks with kicks as time expires. That's the ultimate punch in the gut for a team, isn't it? Because you can't bounce back. You can't fight back.
Well, let me just say this. They don't care about how.
They don't.
Only care about how many.
They don't. Right? They haven't got a column for every type of loss, have they?
No, exactly. And I mean, it's like there's no asterisk. Well, we lost close, or I mean, the bottom line is you lost. And in you know, so that's recent. I mean, those are you're grasping, as we say, for straws when you start making those kind of comments. But I think that it's so hard to go from the West Coast to the East Coast and play that, you know, that's the thing that allows the Giants to pick up their first W.
All right. I'm going to go with the Giants as well. You say there's no such thing as a close loss. That's what the Chargers specialize in. And they've got 12 since the start of last season, the Chargers. That's what they always do. I'm going to pick the Giants as well. Arizona at Philadelphia. I like what the Eagles are putting together at the moment, Jeff.
Yeah, I do too. And I see some signs of age in that Cardinal team. I don't think there is that Super Bowl window maybe just closing on them now, and I think the Eagles are on the other end of that spectrum. They're really a good young team, and you know, I like them. I like the Eagles at home.
Yeah, I'm going Eagles as well. Next up, Jacksonville at Pittsburgh. And Jeff, I mean, you can pick a number from Le'Veon Bell last week, 180 plus all-purpose yards, two touchdowns. Here's the number that stands out to me: 39 touches of the football. You know, we worried about him getting up to full speed. Looked like he was on Sunday against Baltimore. Does he keep it going? The Steelers keep it going at home against Jacksonville?
Well, the one thing that you can say, if you're going to attack Jacksonville, you're going to try and run the football on them. And these guys, when Bell is going like he's going now, they can run the football. And they give you so much 11 personnel, Neil, where you just, you know, it's one back, one tight end, three receivers. You got to, you know, make sure you got Antonio Brown dealt with, and you got, you know, Bryant, and they got all these guys you got to handle. I like the Pittsburgh Steelers. I just think that, you know, that's a team right there that maybe the best shot of anybody right now in the AFC to go to the Super Bowl.
All right, I'm going to pick Pittsburgh as well to win that one. The Miami Dolphins, after 16,000 miles via LA, New York, and London, finally head home and they face the Tennessee Titans. Jeff, what's going on with the Dolphins? 6 points in their last two games. Maybe after everything where we got excited in the summer with Jay Cutler coming on board and riding to the rescue, maybe this is what happens when a team loses its franchise quarterback on the eve of a new season. Maybe it's not fixable. I don't know. But they did start 1-4 last year and came back.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of been their habit. And then, you know, you got to factor in a lot of things. You know what I mean? They go through the upheaval of the hurricane.
Mm.
They go through the upheaval of changing their schedule, losing a home game, all that stuff. The bye, now they don't have a bye. All of that stuff, the timeout in L.A., then they go to London. I just think it's been a really unsettling start to the mm-hmm. season, and this is an opportunity. This opportunity to get home, get a little home cooking, get their season going, get their offense going. Because, you know, you made a point about the lack of scoring. Well, think about this, Neil. In their three games, they really have scored only one touchdown that was of significance, because the junk touchdown they scored against the Jets, that was garbage.
Last play of the game, wasn't it?
Could have been
shut out back-to-back weeks.
Yeah, 12 quarters of football, they really scored one touchdown that mattered. And, you know, this is an offense that's got way, way, way too many weapons to be struggling like that.
I'm just relying on Marcus Mariota's hamstring and the fact that Matt Castle might start at quarterback. I'm going to pick the mighty Miami Dolphins. Jeff, what about you?
I'm going to, too. And again, I think about Dick LeBeau's defense that gave up 50 last week. Mm. They need to bounce back. And, you know, they gotta be thinking that this is their opportunity to, you know, get their stinger back, because the Dolphin offense has struggled so bad.
NFC West action next. Seattle at the LA Rams. The Seahawks never play brilliantly against the Rams. Rams have always matched up well with them. I'm going to pick the Rams to win at home, Jeff. What about you?
You know what? If it was anybody other than the Seahawks, I'd say, I don't know, come on, I'm still not buying it. But I just think the Seahawks are a team that's struggling. Mm. I mean, you look at them and they lose their running back. Their right tackle goes into the hospital with a bruised heart from the game. And if Russell Wilson doesn't make plays just on sheer athletic ability, they don't move the ball very well against a Colts defense that isn't very good. So I'm going to take the Rams, too.
All right, both going Rams to win that one. Let's move on to Baltimore at Oakland. This one depends on where the Ravens stay in that. No, it doesn't. But let's move on. Baltimore. I've got to let it go, right? I've got to move on.
Time to move on. Active aggressiveness going on around here today, boy.
I'm moving on now. I promise that's the last mention. Baltimore at Oakland. This is a really tough one to call, Jeff, because it's EJ Manuel. And so the Ravens have had a bunch of problems, but do the Raiders have Michael Crabtree? Do they have, you know, how well does he connect with EJ Manuel? Really tough one to call. But I tell you what, I'm going to pick Oakland, because it's at home and Baltimore are in a kind of world of hurt offensively.
They're in a world of hurt offensively, and they're also not playing great. That defense that was so good the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They all got on a plane, and I think instead of going to London, they went to Tokyo and haven't come back yet, because they're not playing very good defense right now. And so I'll bet you they are going to get a ton of Marshawn Lynch in this game. Mm. And I'm going to take the Raiders at home. And again, I think in a close game, but I agree with you.
Who are you picking?
I'm taking the Raiders.
There we go. Okay. You know, you should know by now, Jeff. Come on. Let's move on.
I take my cues.
Green Bay at Dallas. I'm going to say, as long as Aaron Rodgers is there, all the injuries, all the banged up players on the Green Bay Packers, I still think he finds enough points against Dallas's defense. But Dallas are at home, Jeff. Who do you like in this one? I'm going Green Bay.
I'm going to take Dallas, and I'm going to take Dallas because I think it's at home. I think it's a huge game for the Cowboys. Isn't it amazing, Neil? We're in week, four or five, and we're talking about this is a huge game.
Yeah.
I mean, but you think about this. If you're Dallas right now, you don't want the Eagles to start running away from them. You don't want to go into that. Mm. You don't want to go into divisional play a couple down. So, you got to make sure that you pick up one of these. And, you know, for the Packers, same thing. I mean, that Lions team is, you know, sitting on your shoulder.
Right.
And, you know, that's going to make all these games bigger.
Big game on Sunday Night Football is Kansas City at Houston. Houston played good defense as well to go with everything we talked about with Deshaun Watson, Jeff. So that side of the ball starting to firm up. This is a, what are they, 2-2 now, Houston, aren't they? And they could very well have been 3-1. 2-2. Everyone's tied up there apart from the Colts in the AFC South. But they could have had that win against New England. We'd be talking about a much better team in Houston. But there is only one undefeated team left in the NFL, and it's the Kansas City Chiefs. And I'm going to pick them to stay undefeated on the road. Who do you like?
Well, I think the Chiefs are playing the best football in the National Football League right now. Hmm. But, you know, to be undefeated in the NFL is tough, and it gets tougher each week that you play.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take Houston to win at home against Kansas City.
Isn't it amazing that we only got 4 weeks in terms of having just one undefeated team left?
It's incredible. That just shows you how difficult it is to win football games in the National Football League. And the Chiefs right now are really playing well. I mean, they're playing really good football, and they got a lot of ways to attack you, and Bobby Sutton's doing a great job coaching that defense. But, you know, I just think that Houston at home, you know, with the Deshaun Watson factor, I give them – and they're getting help. You know, Fuller's back now, too. That's another weapon that, you know, he played really well the other night.
Let me just ask you this question out of the mailbag, Jeff, and then we'll finish off with Monday Night Football. Jamie Watts says, just how far can the Texans go now, and how good can Watson be? It looks like they've had 5,000 prior misses at quarterback. I mean, they're going to feel good about their young fellow under center, aren't they?
Yeah, I just say pump your brakes a little bit now. It's, you know, talking about a guy who started 2 games, and, you know, doesn't mean he can't do it. I'm just saying that you know, again, it's a long season. There's a lot. His film is going to start to get around more. And, you know, the more your film gets around, the more the coordinators can scheme you. I tell you what, though, if you're any team in the AFC right now, you got to feel better about your Super Bowl chances, because that gigantic gorilla that lives in Foxborough is, you know, kind of sleeping right now. So now this is a year where you got a chance.
It's choking on its banana.
Think about that. Think about that, Neil. They're probably not. What has always been the thing with them? You can't beat them in Foxborough in January.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, in Gillette Stadium in January. Now they're going to be on the road in the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say they might not even be in Foxborough. And if they are in Foxborough, you can beat them there. They've shown that. Let's move on to Monday Night Football then. Minnesota at Chicago. Mitch Trubisky's debut. I'm going to take the Vikings on the road, Jeff, with that defense.
I agree with that, and I think that, you know, Case Keenum, while he's not great, he's a top level backup, and I think the Vikings will win this one, and Trubisky's going to find out it's a little bit different playing in during the regular season when the big boys play than it is in training camp.
Jeff, here's a really interesting question from the mailbag. I'll just take a couple of these, and when we'll finish up, this one comes from Chris, who says, "Do the Browns blow it all up again, or trust in the process for at least one more draft?" And the first thing I think of, Jeff, is they're too all in with this. They went, you know, they kept pushing the chips down the road and sort of stockpiling draft picks. They're too into the process. But, you know, I just said the numbers there for Hugh Jackson. The process can't go on indefinitely, can it, if you don't win football games?
Well, the process will go on. It'll go on without you. And, you
but know, will it go on with
that's
that?
The reality of it.
No, but I mean, do you think it will go on with Sashi Brown and the way they're doing it the whole way?
I think so, because I heard Jimmy Haslam say last week. He said we're going to be a good football team in 2018, 2019. Mm. So they're already thinking that far out, right? They're not thinking this year. They're thinking in the future. So I think they are, like you say, all in that rebuild. And you know, if it's gonna work, they better stay with it, because we've seen enough of the other Cleveland where they're, you know, switching from pillar to post every 2 years. That's a recipe for disaster.
Let me take two more questions and see as we wrap up the podcast. We've got a few coming in, Jeff. Let me just see if I can get through. This one from Jack Humphrey, who says, how does Ben McAdoo still have a job? 2 weeks on the trot, he's left points on the field by going for it. And costing us 2 wins. Is it early to be on a hot seat after 4 weeks?
No, I don't think so, particularly in that situation. I think that, you know, New York's obviously there was high expectations going into the season. You got out, went out and got Brandon Marshall, and, you know, you got Shepard, and you got OBJ, and you got a, you know, quarterback who's, you know, I saw a statistic the other day. I think he's like seventh all time in, you know, passing yards and that. So, and you got a defense that was, you know, ferocious the year before. Everybody thought this team was going to be the team to beat in the AFC East and they, or NFC East, and they still may be, Neil, but they got to wake up and they got to start playing, or they're going to, you know, that seat's going to get real hot for Coach McAdoo.
All right, lots of questions coming in. Jeff, a guy called Adam has asked about four questions, including who's the better running back, Adrian Peterson or Alex Smith? He also wants to know what our favourite soup is. Chunky vegetable for me. You? What's your favourite soup?
For me, it is Caribbean seafood soup, and I make it, so I know what's in it, and I like it.
Yeah, my favourite's the Super Bowl, Jeff. There we go. See what I did there? I don't even want to think
about
it.
Oh, man. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
We'll edit that out. We'll edit that out, or I'll get my coat, one or the other. Crikey, that was terrible. All right. What a way to end. Talk about end on a high. We're ending like a New York Giants special teams unit.
Oh, my God. All right. Come on now.
Good stuff,
hey,
Jeff.
Hey. I just got to – I think we owe an apology after – 4 weeks of the season, we owe an apology to all those long-suffering New York Jet fans out there, because we called them a tire fire. Right?
Well, I don't know about we there, Jeff. Hang on a minute. Hang on. I was probably asking you the questions, wasn't I?
Oh, listen to this disclaimer coming at me now.
You are quite correct.
I mean,
I did it, Jeff. I did it. I'll hold my hand up as well. I wrote them off completely. I thought they were done. I thought they'd win one game all year.
Well, you know what? I give Todd Bowles a lot of credit, because that's really difficult when everybody, and I'm talking about everybody, everybody in the New York media, everybody in the national media, everybody in the international media is talking about how bad you're going to be. Mm. To be able to shut that kind of noise out and be able to play the way they played, and they're not a great football team, but, you know, they won some games, and that's, like you say, they could be on, you know, on top of that division this weekend if they win again. So, to you long-suffering Jet, I'm going to, you know, say I'll eat crow on this one and say you're only a small tire fire right now.
Jeff, I now know how my kids feel when they sort of hit each other or have a fight and I make them apologize and they don't want to do it. Are you making me apologize as well?
No, because of your Miami Dolphin loyalties, I know you can't apologize about the Jets. That's just part of your DNA as a Dolphin fan.
All right, I'll do it as well. Jets fans, I'm sorry, and you're sorry?
Come on, Georgie, go on.
I did the best I could. I am sorry. Look, Jets, credit the Jets for, as I said last week on Regent Street, when I got up on stage, I was like, no more Jets jokes from me. They beat my team, and they'd certainly proven a lot of people wrong. Well, that's what we love about the NFL, Jeff. It's hard to, I mean, just, sure, just as we wrap up, I mean, crikey, is there a Super Bowl favorite in each conference? Both conferences are wide open right now at the quarter mark.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think they're all wide open, but I you know, if you say in the AFC, I'd say the Steelers better, because they got the best talent in the division or in the conference. And then you go the other direction, and boy, that one really, to me, is wide, wide, wide open. So we'll see. It's going to be interesting.
All right. We've done enough talking there to put some space between my joke and the end of this podcast, Jeff. So we've done a good job there. Until next week, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.